I don't have this on my outline, so I want to make sure I don't forget to do it, so I'll just do it right here at the first. I've got a pile of books up here. I'm a book nut, and I'll be glad after we're done, if you want to come up and look at any of these, I can tell you more about which ones are good for what. But let me just mention a few of these quickly. Every one of these books I've got here, with maybe one exception, is from a biblical perspective. Obviously, there's lots of financial books that are really good that aren't from a biblical perspective at all. Let me mention this one. This is called The Richest Man in Babylon. In the back of the book that I wrote, I have brief reviews of most of these that are here, where you can read more about them if you look at that. But this book, it says over 2 million books in print. That's a lot. And the other thing to note about this book maybe is it was written in 1926 and it's still in print. That means it's a good book. It is a series of parables, really, about the man who was the richest man in Babylon, back in ancient Babylon, and how he handled money. And so there's just some good lessons. This is the one that I would say is not really biblically based, but there are good lessons about one of the thoughts that you would, maybe a phrase that is memorable from this book is pay yourself first. Of course, I think that's wrong. That's not biblical, but pay yourself second, it might not be far off from a good thing to do. The idea was just to make sure you're saving something. Don't just spend all your income. We paid all our kids $10 to read this book. It's good for teenagers. You know, teenagers can read this and get a lot out of it. I usually read this book about every 3 or 4 years. It's just a motivational book, really. And there's some other books here that fall into that category. A couple of Dave Ramsey's books are motivational books, basically. Financial Peace, The Total Money Makeover is his most famous book. So those are good motivational books. Larry Burkett, this book is called Debt-Free Living. He's written a lot of books. And one of the interesting things he has in this book is an appendix which has, he calls it credit-related scriptures. So he's got a list and with a very brief synopsis of every passage in scripture that has to do with debt. Let me say something maybe about just a couple more of these. I think it'd be a good thing if you're just, you know, starting to get your finances under control to read or to have and read a book like these two books. Either one, they're both good. This is Master Your Money by Ron Blue. This is The World's Easiest Guide to Finances by Larry Burkett. And they're both, again, from a biblical perspective, but these are the kind of books that touch on virtually every financial issue. So it'll talk about wills, it'll talk about investing a little bit, it'll talk about how to buy a car, and just all sorts of things that we run into. So these are not so much motivational books as they are sort of how-to-do-it books. And I may mention a couple more of these later, but I thought I would go ahead and say that. Again, if you want to look at any of those, just let me know. We talked last night about if you're married, you need to be meeting with your spouse regularly. So basically what I'm going to do in these next bullets is I'm going to talk about some things that Leanne and I do that work very well for us. So as I said, we sit down every 2 weeks or so right before I get paid, and we spend 15 minutes or so talking about what's going to happen in the pay period that's coming up. I'll get into that a little bit more in just a minute, how those meetings work. When you list things, sometimes I see lists that start with a step zero. So step zero in a list is like a prerequisite. It's like you really have to do this before you really get started with this big plan here. And the second bullet there is a sort of a step zero. The first thing to do if you're in financial difficulty is to stop borrowing money. You can't get out of the hole by digging further. So You've got to learn to live on less than you make. You've got to learn not to compete, not to feel like you have to have everything that everybody has. You know, if we're Christians, I used to think when I was in school and college, I don't know that I implemented it very well, but I always thought about this. I thought, you know, if all my buddies are out here who are Christians, they're taking 15 hours a semester, let's say. Am I going to be able to take the same loads that all these people are taking and still have time to serve God the way I should? Or am I going to have to take a little bit less of a load than somebody else? Now, usually, I probably ended up taking about the same load because they were doing a lot of other things, partying, that I didn't do. But somehow, I've got to make sure that I'm devoting enough to the Lord. I can't live the way everybody else does. So, financially speaking, if I'm giving the way I should, I'm not going to be able to have all the stuff that a worldly person with the same income as me has. And so I just have to accept that fact. We were talking during the break about David talking about how can I give to the Lord that which costs me nothing? And so the idea is giving must be sacrificial. And if I can't feel some hurt, if you will, from my giving, if I'm not giving up something to give to God, is it really much of a sacrifice?
Hey, Stan.
Yes.
I heard a story from a preacher that knew someone that worked at this plant, and someone was asking him, he said, how in the world, he asked him, first of all, do you give it 10%? And he said, well, you know, I don't tithe, but I give at least 10%. He didn't tell them how much he gave. And they just couldn't get over the fact that 10% of his income went in the collection plate. And so what he did is he says, but, you know, there's a lot of things that you do that I don't do. There's a lot of things you spend money on I don't spend money on. And so they sat down, you know, during their break at lunch or whatever, and they just wrote down all the things that they had spent each month. Like drinking or smoking or, you know, gambling or anything like that. And some other guys saw them doing this, and so there was a group of guys that they were all trying to figure out how much a month they'd spend on things that he wouldn't do.
Lottery tickets.
Yeah. It came out to be, on average, about 15%, 15 to 20% of their income went to the high of this, things that he wouldn't do.
Good.
And I think the reason he was using that example is just to say a lot of times people in the world spend more on their idols than we approach God.
We mentioned, I'm still on the third bullet there, we mentioned last night about the idea that we need to learn to live on one income, even if we have two, and what that will enable us to do for the Lord. On this issue of not competing, I think I heard somebody say it like this, people want to keep up with the Joneses. The Joneses are in debt up to their eyeballs. Usually. So that's a competition you can't win. We don't always know. You know, people who look like they're doing great financially may be in terrible condition. got this illustration here. If you know whose house this is, don't say it yet. Let me tell you about this house. Maybe you can see it. It's a nice house. It's a large house. I don't know how many square feet it is. It's a 5-bedroom, 2.5-bath house. It was purchased in 1958 by a man who still lives there. He bought it for $31,500 in 1958. Now, we can't relate to 1958 dollars very much, especially the younger ones of us. I'll give you a little bit of context. The house that my parents moved into when I was 2 years old, that was in 1961. So not too far off from this. It was a 1,440 square foot house. 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. Very small by today's standards. It cost $12,000. So, and today it's probably, I don't know, $130,000 house, $140,000 house. So $31,500 in 1958. That's a nice house. Does anybody know whose house this is?
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett. This is Warren Buffett's house. Now, you may not know who Warren Buffett is. Warren Buffett is one of the richest men in the world. His wealth, his net worth, according to his Wikipedia page, as of this month, is $73.8 billion. Now, I thought about that. I didn't write down that net worth. I thought, okay, I'll remember that. I'll just round it off to 74, and I'll remember it that way. And then I realized, rounding 73.8 billion to 74 billion is a $200 million round off. So this man has more than enough wealth to live any place he wants to, multiple places he wants to, all over the world. That made me think of Nicolas Cage. And that's all you've heard of Nicolas Cage's financial situation. But it is not good. I mean, here's a guy who makes movies and probably gets $20 or $25 million every time he makes a movie. He's not making movies fast enough to keep up with his expenditures. He's got mansions. I read the list one time, I didn't look it up before I came, but he has, seven or eight mansions all over the world. Got one in the Mediterranean here and there and everywhere. And he's bankrupt, basically. So he can't live, apparently, on $25 million a movie. So it doesn't matter. We get in the mindset sometimes that if my income just went up by this amount, I'd be okay. Probably not. That's probably not the problem. The problem is you're spending too much. I read another fact recently that's just fascinating to me. I never heard this before. This is from Dave Ramsey's newest book, The Legacy Journey, which is, I think, one of his two books that are the most biblically based. A lot of scripture is looked at in here. I know a lot of people don't like Dave Ramsey, and I can understand why. But, I would say more than 90% of what he says is good. So I can ignore the other part and get the good part. But this is a really good book. And he's basically talking here about, okay, you've done what you needed to do to get your financial house in order. Now what are you going to do with your money? And the book focuses on giving. That's what this book is all about. But this is a statistic that's just astounding to me. We hear a lot today about people want to redistribute wealth. The president talked about it in his State of the Union speech, apparently Tuesday night. Got to get more from these rich folks so we can take care of the poor. The average household income in America is right around $50,000. I said that last night. Suppose your household income is well below average, and you make $34,000 a year. Household income, $34,000 a year before taxes. Here's the astounding part. If you're living in America and your household makes $34,000 a year, you are in the top 1% of income earners in the world. And yet we think that if I just made a little more, I would be okay. We need to learn to live on less than we make, whatever that is. And I know there are situations where people aren't making enough money. They need to work two jobs for a period of time or something, but usually the problem is on the expense side. We just want more than we can afford. Sort of back to what we do. The first thing when you're starting out on this journey is you've got to have an emergency fund to protect yourself against things that go wrong, because your budget is never correct. If you're budgeting ahead of time, the budget will never turn out the way you put it down on paper exactly. It's always something unusual that happens. So you have to have something to protect yourself when those unusual things happen so that you don't have to go in debt to handle them. And so some of this is coming straight out of Dave Ramsey's plan. You need a what he calls a baby emergency fund. So he says $1,000. I'd say, you know, these days, might be more to have a little more than that. You know, transmission's more than $1,000. And that can happen. If transmission goes out, you gotta fix it pretty quickly, usually. And so do you have enough cash to buy yourself a new transmission next week? And then there's the cash flow plan. So this is a budget. So this is what we do at our budget committee meetings that we have right before I get paid here for 2 weeks. And let me show you. I Google something like example budget forms for young people, I think is what I Google. And I'll talk to you in a minute about the first thing that pops up when you Google that. So let me give you this other example here. Because I think these are just a couple that I found when I did that search, and there's a few points we can make maybe from these. I'll start on the side that says, I think I didn't keep one for myself. Let me start on the side that says money under 30. There may not be a whole lot to learn from this one, but maybe we can make a few points. There are all sorts of ways to do budgeting. So the way I'm going to suggest is not necessarily the best way. So if you don't like what I'm going to suggest, you can do it and do something that works for you. But you have to do it somehow. To manage money, you have to plan. So this is a really simple form. It says a really simple budget. Print this monthly budget worksheet and use it to compare your income with your projected expenses. Rework it monthly to ensure you're always living within your means. I don't know exactly what they mean by that. It almost sounds like, well, it won't work, so we'll adjust it next month, and then it won't work again, and we'll adjust it that way. That's what used to happen to us a lot when we were trying to budget the way we used to budget, is it just didn't quite ever work out, and then, you know, you're always a little bit off. But you can find all sorts of examples like this. The one that I pulled up, which I didn't copy for you, but the first one that popped up when I Googled that sample budget for a young couple, or something like that. It's real simple looking here, which is good for somebody who's starting out. But there were some people that commented on it on the internet, and one of the comments was, here's the monthly expenses, listen carefully. savings. That's good that they put that near the top. Mortgage or rent, car payment, car, home insurance, health insurance, heating, cable, phone, electric, other. Has anybody ever seen anything that wasn't there that I didn't mention? These people don't need it. They forgot food on the form. That's one of the comments that somebody said, they've got it on me. So that's one of the things you have to be careful about when you're using some budget form, is that it's not covering something important like food. So just be careful. And probably the way to do it is, you know, start by writing down everything that you spend, and then make sure that whatever budget form you're using has got a place for everything that you wrote down.
Well, you misunderstood. It's a budget and a diet.
Yeah. It only works for about 1 month. Now, flip this one. I thought this one was very, it doesn't look as nice, maybe, but just a spreadsheet. But there's a lot of things that we could discuss here. One thing I like about this one is it starts out, I'm going to show this to the college kids, especially, because one of the things they may not understand is this is a $46,000 household income, which is almost average in America. But then this one shows, okay, that's $3,833 a month. But then I have my federal withholding, then I have my Social Security, then I have my Medicare, then this person lives in California, so they get whacked a couple more times. We all know that that's the way checks work. But high school and college kids don't understand that checks work like that. You know, they think if you make $48,000 a year, then you get to take $4,000 home every month. So this is a really good instructive thing to see for someone who's young. So there's what I'm left with is $2,896. Now, one of the things I like about this one is they're obviously using it, and there was no text that came with this. I just found this image. They're obviously using this to illustrate actions that this person is taking to save money. So there's these notes over to the right. They have naked DSL, which I never heard of. Sounds like something we don't want, but it just means it's DSL with no phone line. That's all they got. So there's no landline. They've got a prepaid Virgin Mobile phone, $10 a month. I didn't know such a thing was possible. That's not what my phone bill usually looks like. But car insurance is $30 a month because they have liability only. You know, when your car gets real old, you probably ought to have an emergency fund big enough to buy an old car to replace it if you total your car. Just insure it yourself rather than putting collision insurance and such on an old car. Life insurance, this person doesn't do that. Maybe they have, maybe this is a single person, doesn't have any reason to have life insurance. Health insurance, wow. Their employer covers everything. That's nice. My employer doesn't do that. Groceries, they know, hey, I buy my stuff at regional stores and dollar stores. I don't buy everything at the most expensive, fancy, upscale grocery stores. Car payment, I don't have one. That's good, because I bought a 1994 Toyota Corolla. That's what I'm driving around. This person. Automobile gas, they make a note, I'm getting 35 miles a gallon because I even bought a manual transmission vehicle. It's a little better mileage. So this person is thinking about their expenses very carefully here. I don't buy work lunches. They come from my brown bag, which comes out of my grocery category up there. Lunches at work can kill your budget. And it's astounding to me how the prices of lunch have gone, fast food stuff has gone up. You know, I go into Burger King and it's like, are you kidding me? You see somebody in front of you buy the triple whopper with mega-sized fries and a drink and it's $9 or something for lunch at Burger King. Wow. Household items, we don't do those. Clothes, we don't do much of that. Charity, it's not applicable to me. So, giving is not on the right place on this budget. It is really might as well not even be on this budget. This person doesn't do that. So that's instructive. That's not what a Christian's budget can look like. So anyway, I thought this person is putting money into a Roth IRA. That's commendable. They've got an emergency fund. They've got it in a interest-bearing checking account with ING or some such thing. So there's a lot of good things to learn from that one that I'll spend time on. Here's what we use. And we do it the old-fashioned way. I use computers all the time, but I love my computer. I've got plenty, I think, but maybe if you're a couple, you might just take one. You don't necessarily need two. We're not going to do anything with this. I just want you to see it. This comes out of, actually, I think you've got it in a couple of, Clay Ramsey has this in a couple of his books, and he says, by the way, copy this freely as long as you don't sell it. So, notice he calls this an allocated spending plan to get away from the budget word. The budget scares a lot of people. So you can call it whatever you want to. So we sit down and, you know, I'm going to get paid next on the 31st. I get paid twice a month. So I'll get paid the 31st is next Saturday, I guess. So I get paid on the 30th. So by Tuesday, probably, my pay stub electronically will be on my employer's website and I can see exactly what it looks like. I have a weird job and I don't always get paid the same every month. So I know exactly what I've got. So I'll write in, okay, here's the date for this pay period, and then we're just going to do everything. So first is my income, and then there's Dave Ramsey, bless his heart. First thing he's got on his list, a charity. That's where it should be. So that's right off the top. First fruits. I think that's great. The next thing he's got, remember what I said about the rich man in Babylon book, pay yourself first. He's not paying himself first, he's paying himself second, which I think is good. It's hard to do. So he's got saved for various reasons. And then he's got all these different things. One thing I like about this is it's got almost everything you need on it. It's got a lot of stuff we don't need, I hope. Like, somewhere on here is alimony. Whoa. Isn't that on here? I'm not saying that.
That's child support.
That's what I'm thinking of. Child support. I guess that's the major thing. Yeah, alimony is the first thing and the last thing. So there's some that we don't use, but there's a few things that we do that we have that aren't on here, but not very many. Like, you know, we have an exterminator we pay every month. That's not really a nice place to put that. So I can steal one of these categories out of use like alimony or something. Draw on what we call it, exterminator.
And you may have already said this, but if you get paid just twice a month, you'll just fill up two of these.
I will. The first paycheck in the month will be the first column here, and the second paycheck in the month will be the second column, and then the next month I'll do these. So basically, this lasts me 2 months.
Okay, so you
and then I'll make more copies every couple of months. Now, one thing you guys that we don't do, he has this little slash here in the middle of most of these. That's to put, he says, put how much you're spending on the left of the slash, and on the right of the slash, put how much of your income you've got left. Well, I don't do that because I may have to adjust things, and I don't want to have to go back and change all those totals. So I just ignore the right half and add it up when I get to the bottom. So we literally write down every dollar that is in our equation. It goes on this list somewhere. So you can see on the third page, by the way, when you get out of debt, this bottom part is gone. You know, nothing appears down here when you're out of debt. So you could, if you're a computer geek, it'd be real easy. Just put this on a spreadsheet. Add the columns like exterminators if you use that aren't here. Delete the alimony account for it if you don't need that. And then if you're out of debt, your form could be a lot shorter than this one actually. But he's got miscellaneous. He's got flow. He's got entertainment. So he's got all kinds of places to put money. So you don't really have a surplus at the end of the month in one sense. If you have a surplus, which hopefully you do, you allocate it to something. So the surplus goes in your savings or your blow or you know wherever or increased giving, wherever you want to put it.
And this is obviously after tax.
After tax, that's right. So the income there is what I'm bringing home. Any question about that? It works beautifully for us, and one of the reasons, I said this last night, but one of the reasons it works better than we just would try to do a monthly budget and go back and you know look at kind of the average, what it looked like, and then no one has averaged the average month. So if we said my monthly utility bill last year averaged $214 a month, and I put down $214 for the utility bill, well, the month is not going to be $214. And then what I do? So, you know, half the month has got the mortgage, if you still got a mortgage in it, the other half doesn't. Half has got the phone bill, the other half may have the electric bill and the gas bill or something. And you can balance those out to try to balance the expenses across the two pay periods. But if maybe you got more stuff due in the second half of the month than you do in the first half of the month, just move it. Move some of it earlier. You know, go ahead and allocate it in the first part of the month to try to balance it out a little better. Anybody have another question about that?
Do you keep all of those on file so that obviously some things are handy, and that's what has always gotten us.
Yep.
You know, we know it comes up every September, but every September it surprises us. Forgot about that annual insurance or whatever it is, but
yep.
That annual bill that comes.
Those are tough, and some of those we do well, some of them we don't do as well. But we keep them all in a binder, so we can go back for years. Now, this would be an advantage, obviously, of computerizing it. You could do a lot of analysis that's harder for me to do doing it on paper. I'm just an old-fashioned guy. But you do have to watch those, you know, here's a car insurance coming at me that's $400 every 6 months. So you've got to know when that's coming, and then you can either do one of two things. You can put it aside, you know, in one whack, or you can budget it on a monthly basis as long as you get started far enough in advance to have that much, you know, to save up to $400 until it hits. You can't start saving $30 a month and have the $400 hit the second month you're doing that. So, other questions on that?
The thing you have to press on the email is on the younger is the importance of doing it. You can't manage money without information. And information comes right here. You've got to track what you're doing, make your guesses, and see how you track against it. We've got a budget from 1966, every month. I didn't cost much to live back then.
Well, you didn't make it much either. Okay. So there's the idea of the budget or the cash flow plan or the cash allocation, spending allocation, whatever he calls it. So there's the planning part of financial management. Then you have to have the control part, like I talked about last night. So management means planning and control. So how do we control? This is what used to be an even bigger problem for us than finding a budgeting approach that worked. Is, okay, now we have the budget. How do I make sure I spend what I said I would spend on the budget? And so we started using envelopes. That's not the only way to do it. If that doesn't work for you, just find something that works for you. So you can do a lot of different things. Some people spend all their money with plastic as long as they use the credit card effectively, and it's all run through, you know, all their finances are run through Quicken or something, and they do it all like that. If that works, that's wonderful. Just find something that works. The envelopes, you know, we basically, you can control most of your spending with just a few envelopes. We have envelopes for, we have one for groceries and one for eating out. We have one for clothing. We have one for, we actually put our gasoline in an envelope. We had a college student years ago who talked about, he just liked to go home on the weekends, you know, so he's driving his pickup truck, which probably didn't give her a good gas money. He's driving it all over to Alabama and going here and going there and all this. And he's like, man, the gas is killing me. He didn't have control of how much gas he was buying. So the envelope controls that. We have a benevolence envelope. Because, you know, if somebody comes up and here's somebody who has this need and I haven't planned to have any money, you know, I can find myself with an empty wallet easily at the moment when someone needs something. So I need to be prepared for a situation like that, or I won't be able to take advantage of it. I'm probably forgetting one, but anyway, that does most of, you know, those are the places, somebody calls the grocery store or Walmart the land of impulse. And so, you know, if you control what you're spending in the grocery store, you're way ahead of most people.
Do you have some envelopes that are not part of the monthly budget, but rather it's kind of like, okay, here's our vacation envelope, and we're going to put something away a little bit each month and let this build up?
Yep, we have a Christmas envelope, vacation envelope, which we don't always do a very good job of planning ahead for some of that stuff, but we have a contingency envelope, which is just, Here's cash in case things happen that we didn't plan on. But you certainly, you know, you don't have to, you might say, well, you use envelopes. Well, you sure don't have this many envelopes. All these categories.
I'd like to say it brings control over what you do, because once that money is going out to eat, envelope goes empty, you don't go out to eat.
Yeah. Or you may be able to borrow it from another envelope, which is flush, but at least, you know, there's still the same amount is there. So you can borrow money from another envelope if it has money in this one that you want doesn't, but it's a little bit.
Do what?
That's right. That's right.
I always knew it too at the grocery store. If you're $2.50 over your $300 budget for groceries for that week, what do you take back? I mean, how did that work? You know, I mean, have you ever been in that situation where you're like, oh, wait, I'm sorry?
There's probably something in your basket that you could take back. But, or usually, there's a little bit of money in some other envelope that you can move around.
So how do you handle carryover? Okay, so you controlled your spending at the grocery store. You had $400 in there, but you got, and you roll it over, do you put that vacation fund, or?
It depends. I mean, we've done it different ways. Once you know,
are you talking
You probably eventually, if you're overfunding consistently, then you need, you're budgeting too much. So you need to maybe cut that budget item down a little bit eventually. But we've done just put it into some stash for travel or something, put it into the contingency envelope, save it for the next period, which is likely to be worse than this one. So somebody have a comment?
That's going to be one thing I do at the grocery store that is very time-consuming, especially when you look at that. I tally as I go how much it's going to be. If I put something in the cart, and I'll round up, because it's cheaper than if it's free, then I'm tax. Because when I used to not do that, the better level of prices like $30 in tax, but I wasn't expecting. But, and that kind of helps me, and then when my kid tries to grab something, put the cart down. It lets me know that I'm either going to be on, and it's always interesting, and this is nerdy of me, but it's fun because I try to guess how much it's going to be at the cash register and have my money ready so I can go play and also to make a great game.
That's good. I used to go with Leanne some grocery shopping and just do the arithmetic in my head because I like doing arithmetic in my head. But I don't do that as much as I should. Go with her, I mean. Another thought?
Okay.
I mentioned last night the idea of the debt snowball and the debt, somehow you have to develop a plan to get rid of your debt. Or it will hang around. It certainly will hang around longer than you want it to. So the debt snowball, Dave Ramsey's kind of famous for that, but he did not come up with that idea. That's an old idea. And again, just list everything that you owe, smallest dollar amount first. The nerd financial people would say highest interest rate first, but the guys who like the debt snowball say, you're going to save a few pennies on interest probably by doing it that way. And it's not nearly as motivating as it is to get those quick victories of seeing a line go off that list. And so minimum payments on everything below the top thing. Pay that one off as fast as you can. Roll what you're paying on that one down onto the next one. Pay that off as fast as you can and just go work your way down to the biggest list. You don't put your house in the debt snowball, typically. That's a separate category. So in Dave Ramsey's plan, he says, and I left something off my list here, after you do your baby emergency fund and then your debt snowball, then you fully fund your emergency fund. And most financial people say you need 3 to 6 months worth of expenses in an emergency fund. And then I think we talked about this. If you have some savings, then you need to have a plan for what that savings is for. So this is for retirement. This is for the college fund. This is for the house down payment that I'm saving up for. This is for the car that I'm going to have to replace. This is for fun, a trip, or whatever. Just give it a name. Just like on our budget form, give every dollar of your paycheck a name. Give every dollar in your savings account a name. That'll help you manage it better. Otherwise, the tendency is, I'd really like to have this. I got enough money in savings, and you go get it.
I heard a father tell me that he included his kids in that. They used kind of something like the envelope plan. And there was a reward at the end of each month. If they didn't spend as much money as they had allocated in the eating out or whatever, there was some discretion in it, even groceries to some extent. That the kids could see the money going from that envelope into their vacation fund. And it's like, if we do this for a year, we can go to Disney World. We can do something that we wouldn't normally do. And so the kids got really excited, and they would even remind their parents, when they're going out to eat or something like that, let's not spend too much money. The kids got really, it became a family thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Any mechanism you use to get your kids, our kids when they were little had 3 envelopes. Giving, saving, spending. And then the last one I have there is evaluate your progress. I know this sounds kind of materialistic, but it doesn't have to be. But what we do every half year or so is we got a form that shows our net worth. Assets minus liabilities equals net worth. So what's our net worth? We're not doing that, I hope, to feel proud about it. We're just doing it to see how it's changing over time, to give us an idea of, are we making progress? I would hope, I would never make a decision about my giving based upon the effect that that's going to have on my net worth. Now, if I give this, and I won't reach my net worth goal. I don't have a net worth goal. I want to have some way to track, to know that I'm doing a better job than I was doing before. And you may think of other ways to do that. I mean, sometimes you can see it in your checkbook balance, right? Balance is better. I got more in there than I did at the end of the month last month. That's another way to evaluate. All right, it's about 10 to 12. Does anybody have any other discussion or question? Or?
What did you say for the last part of your
trip? Giving, spending, and saving. Saving is kind of a long-term thing. Spending is money that they could basically use any time.
We didn't do it that way.
Like when you get birthday money or Christmas money or stuff like that. That's a good idea. I mean, we talked to them about how much goes in the giving envelope, but we really didn't give them, I don't think, much direction on the other two envelopes.
Stan, the question I was going to ask before I forgot to get you to comment on this was, some of us, I mean, I'll be back this afternoon, but some of us have teenagers or kids that are going to be in the afternoon session. It might be helpful if we had kind of a preview of what you're going to discuss with the younger ones, because you know, we might want to review some of these things with the family. And what would be some things for us to discuss with our kids?
Well, I guess I'm focusing that I'm going to do some of what we did here. I'm going to run through the same plan with them. I'm not going to have this kind of discussion on covetousness, really, with them. But the focus of the first part is going to be diligence. So we're going to talk about what does that mean? How can I be diligent versus not be diligent? And I don't remember a lot of the detail there. But I've got a sheet just like this that I'm going to hand out to them so you can see their sheet.
Are you going to discuss some of these same bullet points at the bottom?
At the bottom, yep. But I think that's something young people struggle with, is, you know. And I did when I was a teenager. I mean, we always think, you know, today's teenagers, they don't know how to work, blah, 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 blah. Some of us didn't either. I'm talking about giving and sacrificing. You know, those lattes add up. And if you sacrifice one latte a week, you can put something in the plate on Sunday instead of putting nothing, as if you haven't prospered as a teenager or a young person. If you prospered, you should give. Sacrifice something so you can give. I really like that song, Give of Your Best to the Master. One of the things I'm going to talk about is something I used to struggle with when I was younger, is, you know, Monday through Friday, that's work time. Saturday is mine. Sunday is the Lord's. That's wrong. Every day is the Lord's. Now, one of the ways that problem manifests itself, I think, with a lot of young people especially, is Friday night and Saturday night, we get to have fun. And it may be perfectly godly sorts of fun, but it may go on too long. And then we come in on Sunday morning unable to stay awake, we are not giving of our best to the master. So that's one thing I'll be sure to tell.
You're talking about going off a football game or playing one way?
Anything.
Come back after midnight.
That's right. That's right. That could be it.
You've had to sleep.
That could be it. Our kids go they play games, board games a lot with some of the other young kids. So they're playing board games, and they get into these involved board games, you know, that take 5 hours to play one time. And then when they finish that one, they want to start another one. And so it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, you have to say, okay, Friday night you may get away with that, but Saturday night you cannot do that. You need to go to bed earlier on Saturday night than you do on school nights. So you'll be ready. Anything else? Same thing with time. You know, college kids think they don't have much time. They don't know, do they? And so they think, you know, I'll have more time to serve the Lord when I'm out of college. And you got to start right now. All right, maybe a closing prayer. Brother Brad, would you lead us in a closing prayer? Again, if anybody wants to look at any of these books or ask me about them, you can do that now or later in the week. I'll have them.